holding down her hair, which was being blown around by the wind. She stepped gingerly onto the jetty, avoiding the holes and rotten planks.
I couldn't miss the chance of watching the Witcher at work. Will you think me nosy again, Geralt?
Why, I don't deny it. I really am nosy.
How goes it?
How goes what?
Oh, Geralt, she said. You underestimate my curiosity and my talent for gathering and interpreting information. I know everything about the case of the Pearl Divers. I know the details of your agreement with Aglaval. I know you're looking for a sailor willing to sail there, towards the Dragon's Fangs. Did you find one?
He looked at her searchingly for a moment, and then suddenly decided.
No, he replied. I didn't. Not one.
Are they afraid?
Yes, they are.
How, then, do you intend to carry out an exploration if you can't go to sea? How, without sailing, do you plan to get at the monster that killed the Pearl Divers?
He took her by the hand and led her from the jetty. They walked slowly along the edge of the sea, across the pebbly beach, beside the launches pulled up on the shore, among the rows of nets hung up on stilts, among the curtains of split, drying fish being blown by the wind. Geralt unexpectedly found that the poet's company did not bother him at all, that it was not wearisome or intrusive. Apart from that, he hoped that a calm and matter-of-fact conversation would erase the results of that stupid kiss on the terrace. The fact that Essie had come to the jetty filled him with the hope that she did not bear him a grudge. He was content.
"Get at the monster," he muttered, repeating her words. "If only I knew how. I know very little about sea monsters."
"Interesting. From what I know, there are many more monsters in the sea than there are on land, both in terms of number and variety of species. It would seem, thus, that the sea ought to be a great opportunity for witches to show what they can do."
"Well, it isn't."
"Why?"
"The expansion of people onto the sea," he said, clearing his throat and turning his face away, "hasn't lasted very long. Witches were needed long ago on the land during the first phase of colonization. We aren't cut out to fight sea-dwelling creatures, although you're right, the sea is full of all sorts of aggressive filth. But our witcher abilities are insufficient against sea monsters. Those creatures are either too big for us, or are too well armoured, or are too sure in their element, or all three."
"And the monster that killed the Pearl Divers? You have no idea what it was?"
"A kraken, perhaps."
"No, a kraken would have wrecked the boat, but it was intact, and, as they said, totally full of blood."
Little Eye swallowed and visibly paled.
"Don't think I'm being a know-all. I grew up by the sea, and I've seen a few things."
"In that case, what could it have been? A giant squid? It might have dragged those people from the deck."
"There wouldn't have been any blood. It wasn't a squid, Geralt, or a killer whale, or a Draco turtle, because whatever it was didn't destroy or capsize the boat. Whatever it was went on board and carried out the slaughter there. Perhaps you're making a mistake looking for it in the sea."
The Witcher pondered.
"I'm beginning to admire you, Essie," he said.
The poet blushed.
"You're right. It may have attacked from the air. It may have been an ornithodragon, a griffin, a wyvern, a flying drake or a forktail, possibly even a rock."
"Excuse me," Essie said. "Look who's coming."
Aglaval was approaching along the shore alone, his clothes sopping wet. He was visibly angry and flushed with rage on seeing them. Essie curtsied slightly. Geralt bent his head, pressing his fist to his chest. Aglaval spat.
"I sat on the rocks for 3 hours almost from daybreak," he snarled. "She didn't even make an appearance. 3 hours, like an ass on rocks swept by the waves."
Sorry, the Witcher muttered.
"You're sorry," the Duke exploded. "Sorry? It's your fault. You fouled everything up. You spoiled everything."
"What did I spoil? I was only working as an interpreter.
To hell with work like that,"
Aglaval interrupted angrily, showing off his profile. His profile was indeed kingly, worthy of being struck on coinage.
"Verily, it would have been better not to hire you. It sounds paradoxical, but while we didn't have an interpreter, we understood each other better, Sheenats and I, if you know what I mean. But now, do you know what they're saying in town? Rumours are spreading that the Pearl Divers perished because I enraged the mermaid, that it's her revenge."
Nonsense, the Witcher commented coldly.
How am I to know that it's nonsense? The Duke growled. How do I know you didn't tell her something? Do I really know what she's capable of? What monsters she chums around with down in the depths? By all means, prove to me that it's nonsense. Bring me the head of the beast that killed the pearl divers. Get to work instead of flirting on the beach. To work.
Geralt reacted angrily.
How? Am I to go out to sea, straddle in a barrel? Your Zelest threatened the sailors with torture and the noose, but in spite of that, no one wants to sail out with me. Zelest himself isn't too keen either. So how? What does it bother me, how?
Aglaval yelled, interrupting.
That's your problem. What are witches for, if not so that decent folk don't have to rack their brains about how to rid themselves of monsters? I've hired you to do the job, and I demand you carry it out. If not, get out of here before I drive you to the borders of my realm with my whip.
Calm down, Your Grace, Little Eye said softly, but her paleness and trembling hands betrayed her irritation. And please don't threaten Geralt. It so happens that Dandelion and I have several friends. King Ithane of Sidaris, to mention but one, likes us and our ballads very much. King Ithane is an enlightened monarch and always says that our ballads aren't just lively music and rhymes, but a way of spreading news, that they are a chronicle of humankind. Do you wish, Your Grace, to be written into the chronicle of humankind? I can have it arranged.
Aglaval looked at her for a while with a cold, contemptuous gaze.
The pearl divers who died had wives and children, he finally said, much more quietly and calmly. When hunger afflicts the remaining ones, they will put to sea again. Pearl, sponge and oyster divers, lobster fishers, fishermen, all of them. And now they are afraid, but hunger will overcome their fear. They will go to sea. But will they return? What do you say to that, Geralt, Miss Darwin? I'd be interested to hear the ballad which will sing of that. A ballad about a witcher standing idly on the shore, looking at the blood-spattered decks of boats and weeping children.
Essie blanched even more, but raised her head proudly, blew away the lock of hair, and was just preparing a riposte when Geralt seized her hand and squeezed it, stopping her words.
That is enough, he said. In this entire flood of words, only one has true significance. You hired me, Aglaval. I accepted the task and shall accomplish it, if it is feasible. I am relying on it, the Duke said curtly. Then goodbye. My respects, Miss Darwin.
Essie did not curtsy. She only tilted her head.
Aglaval hauled up his wet trousers and headed off towards the harbour, walking unsteadily over the pebbles.
Only then did Geralt notice he was still holding the poet's hand, but she was not trying to free herself at all.
He released her hand.
Essie, slowly returning to her normal colours, turned her face towards his.
It's easy to make you take a risk, she said. All it takes is a few words about women and children, and so much is said about how unfeeling you witches are. Geralt, Aglaval doesn't give a hoot about women, children, or the elderly. He wants the pearl fishing to begin again because he's losing money every day they don't come back with a catch. He's taking you for a ride with those starving children, and you're ready to risk your life.
Essie, he interrupted. I'm a witcher. It's my trade to risk my life. Children have nothing to do with it.
You can't fool me.
Why the assumption that I mean to?
Perhaps because if you were the heartless professional you pretend to be, you would have tried to push up the price. But you didn't say a word about your fee. Oh, never mind. Enough of all that. Are we going back?
Let's walk on a little.
Gladly. Geralt?
Yes?
I told you I grew up by the sea. I know how to steer a boat and...
Put that out of your head.
Why?
Put that out of your head, he repeated sharply.
You might, she said, have phrased that more politely.
I might have, but you would have taken it as... the devil only knows what. And I am an unfeeling witcher and heartless professional. I risk my life, not other people's.
Essie fell silent. He saw her purse her lips and toss her head. A gust of wind ruffled her hair again, and her face was covered for a moment by a confusion of golden curls.
I only wanted to help you, she said.
I know. Thank you.
Geralt?
Yes?
What if there is something behind the rumours Aglaval was talking about? You know well that mermaids aren't always friendly. There have been cases...
I don't believe them.
Sea witches, Little Eye continued pensively. Nereids, mermen, sea nymphs. Who knows what they're capable of? And the Sheenads, she had reason...
I don't believe it, he interrupted.
You don't believe, or you don't want to believe.
He did not reply.
And you want to appear the cold professional? She asked with a strange smile. Someone who thinks with his sword hilt? If you want, I'll tell you what you really are.
I know what I really am.
You're sensitive, she said softly. Deep in your angst-filled soul, your stony face and cold voice don't deceive me. You are sensitive, and your sensitivity makes you fear that whatever you are going to face with sword in hand may have its own arguments, may have the moral advantage over you.
No, Essie, he said slowly. Don't try to make me the subject of a moving ballad, a ballad about a witcher with inner conflicts. Perhaps I'd like it to be the case, but it isn't. My moral dilemmas are resolved for me by my code and education, by my training.
Don't talk like that, she said in annoyance. I don't understand why you try to...
Essie, he interrupted her again. I don't want you to pick up false notions about me. I'm not a knight errant.
You aren't a cold and unthinking killer, either.
No, he agreed calmly. I'm not, although there are some who think differently. For it isn't my sensitivity and personal qualities that place me higher, but the vain and arrogant pride of a professional convinced of his value. A specialist, in whom it was instilled that the code of his profession and cold routine is more legitimate than emotion. That they protect him against making a mistake, which could be made should he become entangled in the dilemmas of good and evil, of order and chaos. No, Essie. It's not I that am sensitive, but you. After all, your profession demands that, doesn't it? It's you who became alarmed by the thought that an apparently pleasant mermaid attacked the pearl divers in an act of desperate revenge after being insulted. You immediately look for an excuse for the mermaid, extenuating circumstances. You balk at the thought that a witcher, hired by the Duke, will murder an exquisite mermaid just because she dared to yield to emotion. But the witcher, Essie, is free of such dilemmas, and of emotion. Even if it turns out that it was the mermaid, the witcher won't kill the mermaid, because the code forbids him. The code solves the dilemma for the witcher.
Little Eye looked at him, abruptly lifting up her head.
All dilemmas? She asked quickly.
She knows about Yennefer, he thought. She knows. Dandelion, you bloody gossip. They looked at one another.
What is concealed in your deep blue eyes, Essie? Curiosity? Fascination with otherness? What are the dark sides of your talent, Little Eye? I apologize, she said. The question was foolish and naive. It hinted that I believed what you were saying. Let's go back. That wind chills to the marrow. Look how rough the sea is.
It is. Do you know what's fascinating, Essie?
What?
I was certain the rock where Aglaval met his mermaid was nearer the shore and bigger. And now it's not visible.
It's the tide, Essie said shortly. The water will soon reach all the way to the cliff.
All that way?
Yes. The water rises and falls here considerably, well over 10 cubits, because here in the strait and the mouth of the river there are so-called tidal echoes, as the sailors call them.
Geralt looked towards the headland at the dragon's fangs biting into a roaring, foaming breaker.
Essie, he asked, and when the tide starts going out...
What?
How far back does the sea go?
But what... Ah, I get it. Yes, you're right. It goes back to the line of the shelf.
The line of the what?
Well, it's like a shelf. Flat shallows, forming the seabed, which ends with a lip at the edge of the deep waters.
And the dragon's fangs?
Are right on that lip.
And they're reachable by wading. How long would I have?
I don't know. Little Eye frowned. You'd have to ask the locals, but I don't think it would be a good idea. Look, there are rocks between the land and the fangs. The entire shore is scored with bays and fjords. When the tide starts going out, gorges and basins full of water are formed there. I don't know if...
From the direction of the sea, and the barely visible rocks came a splash and a loud, melodic cry.
"White hare!"
the mermaid called, gracefully leaping over the crest of a wave, threshing the water with short, elegant strokes of her tail.
"Sheer nuts!" he called back, waving a hand.
The mermaid swam over to the rocks, stood erect in the foaming green water, and used both hands to fling back her hair, at the same time revealing her torso with all its charms. Geralt glanced at Essie. The girl blushed slightly, and with an expression of regret and embarrassment on her face, looked for a moment at her own charms, which barely protruded beneath her dress.
"Where is my man?" Sheenat sang, swimming closer. "He was meant to have come."
"He did. He waited for 3 hours and then left."
"He left,"
the mermaid said, in a high trill of astonishment.
"He didn't wait. He could not endure 3 meagre hours. Just as I thought. Not a scrap of sacrifice. Not a scrap. Despicable, despicable, despicable. And what are you doing here, White Hare? Did you come here for a walk with your beloved? You'd make a pretty couple. Were you not marred by your legs?"
"She is not my beloved. We barely know each other."
"Yes,"
Sheenat said in astonishment.
"Pity. You suit each other. You look lovely together. Who is it?" "I'm Essie Davin Poet,"
Little Eye sang, with an accent and melody, beside which the witch's voice sounded like the cawing of a crow.
"Nice to meet you, Sheenats."
The mermaid slapped her hands on the water and laughed brightly.
"How gorgeous,"
she cried.
"You know our tongue. Upon my word, you astonish me, you humans. Verily, not nearly as much divides us as people say."
The witcher was no less astonished than the mermaid, although he might have guessed that the educated and well-read Essie would know the elder speech better than him. It was the language of the elves, a euphonious version of which was used by mermaids, sea witches, and nereids. It also ought to have been clear to him that the melodiousness and complicated intonation pattern of the mermaid's speech, which for him was a handicap, made it easier for Little Eye.
"Sheer nuts," he called. "A few things divide us, nevertheless, and what occasionally divides us is spilled blood. Who killed the pearl divers over there by the two rocks? Tell me."
The mermaid dived down, churning the water. A moment later, she spurted back out onto the surface again, and her pretty little face was contracted and drawn into an ugly grimace.
"Don't you dare!"
she screamed, piercingly shrilly.
"Don't you dare go near the steps! It is not for you! Don't fall foul of them! It is not for you!"
What isn't for us?"
"Not for you!"
Sheenats yelled, falling onto her back on the waves. Splashes of water shot high up. For just a moment longer, they saw her forked, finned tail flapping over the waves. Then she vanished under the water. Little Eye tidied her hair, which had been ruffled by the wind. She stood motionless with her head bowed.
"I didn't know," Geralt said, clearing his throat, "that you knew the elder speech so well, Essie."
"You couldn't have known," she said, with a distinct bitterness in her voice. After all, you barely know me."
Chapter 6
"Geralt,"
Dandelion said, looking around and sniffing like a hound,
"it stinks terribly here, don't you think?"
"Does it?"
The witcher sniffed.
"I've been in places where it smelled worse. It's only the smell of the sea."
The bard turned his head away and spat between two rocks. The water bubbled in the rocky clefts, foaming and soughing, exposing gorges full of sea-worn pebbles.
"Look how nicely it's dried out, Geralt. Where has the water gone? What is it with those bloody tides? Where do they come from? Haven't you ever thought about it?"
"No, I've had other concerns."
"I think Dandelion said, trembling slightly, "that down there, in the depths, at the very bottom of this bloody ocean, crouches a huge monster, a fat, scaly beast, a toad with horns on its vile head. And from time to time, it draws water into its belly, and with the water, everything that lives and can be eaten. Fish, seals, turtles, everything. And then, having devoured its prey, it pukes up the water, and we have the tide. What do you think about that?"
"I think you're a fool. Yennefer once told me that the moon causes the tides."
Dandelion cackled.
"What bloody rubbish! What does the moon have to do with the sea? Only dogs howl at the moon. She was having you on, Geralt, that little liar of yours. She put one over on you. Not for the first time either, I'd say."
The Witcher did not comment. He looked at the boulders glistening with water in the ravines exposed by the tide. The water was still exploding and foaming in them, but it looked as though they would get through.
"Very well, let's get to work," he said,
standing and adjusting his sword on his back.
"We can't wait any longer, or we won't make it back before the tide comes in. Do you still insist on coming with me?"
"Yes. Subjects for ballads aren't fir cones. You don't find them under a tree. Aside from that, it's Poppet's birthday tomorrow."
"I don't see the link."
"Pity. There exists the custom among we normal people of giving one another presents on birthdays. I can't afford to buy her anything, so I shall find something for her on the seabed."
"A herring or a cuttlefish?"
"Dolt. I'll find some amber. Perhaps a seahorse or maybe a pretty conch. The point is, it's a symbol, a sign of concern and affection. I like Little Eye, and I want to please her. Don't you understand?"
"Oh, I thought not.
Let's go. You first, because there might be a monster down there."
"Right."
The Witcher slid down from the cliff onto the slippery rocks covered with algae.
"I'll go first, in order to protect you if needs be, as a sign of my concern and affection. Just remember, if I shout, run like hell, and don't get tangled up in my sword. We aren't going to gather seahorses. We're going to deal with a monster that murders people."
They set off downwards into the rifts of the exposed seabed, in some places wading through the water still swirling in the rocky vents. They splashed around in hollows lined with sand and bladderwrack. To make matters worse, it began to rain, so they were soon soaked from head to foot. Dandelion kept stopping and digging around in the pebbles and tangles of seaweed.
"Oh, look, Geralt, a little fish. It's all red by the devil. And here, look, a little eel. And this, what is it? It looks like a great big transparent flea. And this, oh, mother, Geralt!"
The Witcher turned around at once with his hand on his sword. It was a human skull, white, worn smooth by the rocks, jammed into a rocky crevice full of sand. But not only sand. Dandelion, seeing a lugworm writhing in the eye socket, shuddered and made an unpleasant noise. The Witcher shrugged and headed towards the rocky plain exposed by the sea, in the direction of the two jagged reeds known as the Dragon's Fangs, which now looked like mountains. He moved cautiously. The seabed was strewn with sea cucumbers, shells and piles of bladderwrack. Large jellyfish swayed and brittle stars whirled in the rock pools and hollows. Small crabs, as colourful as hummingbirds, fled from them, creeping sideways, their legs scurrying busily. Geralt noticed a corpse some way off, wedged between the rocks. The drowned man's chest could be seen moving beneath his shirt and the seaweed, though in principle there was no longer anything to move it. It was teeming with crabs, outside and inside. The body could not have been in the water longer than a day, but the crabs had picked it so clean it was pointless examining it closer. The Witcher changed direction without a word, giving the corpse a wide berth. Dandelion did not notice anything.
"Why, but it stinks of rot here," he swore, trying to catch up with Geralt.
He spat and shook water from his bonnet.
"And it's tipping down and I'm cold. I'll catch a chill and lose my bloody voice."
"Stop moaning. If you want to go back, you know the way."
Right beyond the base of the Dragon's Fangs stretched out a flat, rocky shelf, and beyond it was deep water, the calmly rippling sea, the limit of the tide.
"Ha! Geralt," Dandelion said, looking around. "I think that monster of yours had enough sense to withdraw to the high sea with the tide, and I guess you thought it'd be lazing about here somewhere, waiting for you to hack it to pieces?"
"Be quiet."
The Witcher
approached the edge of the shelf and knelt down, cautiously resting his hands on the sharp shells clinging to the rocks. He could not see anything. The water was dark, and the surface was cloudy, dulled by the drizzle. Dandelion searched the recesses of the reefs, kicking the more aggressive crabs from his legs, examining and feeling the dripping rocks, bearded with sagging seaweed and specked with coarse colonies of crustaceans and mollusks.
Hey! Geralt!
What?
Look at those shells. They're pearl oysters, aren't they?
No.
Know anything about them?
No.
So keep your opinions to yourself until you do know something. They are pearl oysters, I'm certain. I'll start collecting pearls. At least there'll be some profit from this expedition, not just a cold. Shall I begin, Geralt?
Go ahead. The monster attacks pearl divers. Pearl collectors probably fall into the same category.
Am I to be bait?
Start collecting. Take the bigger ones, because if you don't find any pearls, we can make soup out of them.
Forget it. I'll just collect pearls. Fuck the shells. Damn it. Bitch. How do you bloody open it? Do you have a knife, Geralt?
Haven't you even brought a knife?
I'm a poet, not some knifer. No, to hell with it. I'll put them in a bag and we'll get the pearls out later. Hey, you, scram.
He kicked off a crab, which flew over Geralt's head and splashed into the water. The Witcher walked slowly along the edge of the shelf, eyes fixed on the black, impenetrable water. He heard the rhythmic tapping of the stone Dandelion was using to dislodge the shells from the rock.
Dandelion, come and look!
The jagged, cracked shelf suddenly ended in a level, sharp edge, which fell downwards at an acute angle. Immense, angular, regular blocks of white marble, overgrown with seaweed, mollusks and sea anemones, swaying in the water like flowers in the breeze, could clearly be seen beneath the surface of the water.
What is it? They look like steps.
Because they are steps, Dandelion whispered in awe.
Ooh, they're steps leading to an underwater city, to the legendary Iss, which was swallowed up by the sea. Have you heard the legend of the city of the chasm, about Iss beneath the waves? I shall write such a ballad the competition won't may not hit them. I have to see it up close. Look, there's some kind of mosaic. Something is engraved or carved there. Some kind of writing? Move away, Geralt.
Dandelion, that's a trench. You'll slip off.
Never mind, I'm wet anyway.
See, it's shallow here. Barely waist deep on this first step, and as wide as a ballroom. Oh, bloody hell!
Geralt jumped very quickly into the water and grabbed the bard, who had fallen in up to his neck.
I tripped on that shit,
Dandelion said, gasping for air, recovering himself and lifting a large flat mollusk dripping water from its cobalt blue shell, overgrown with threads of algae.
There's loads of these on the steps. It's a pretty colour, don't you think? Grab it and shove it in your bag. Mine's already full. Get out of there, the Witcher snapped, annoyed. Get back on the shelf this minute, Dandelion. This isn't a game.
Quiet. Did you hear that? What was it?
Geralt heard it. The sound was coming from below, from under the water. Dull and deep, although simultaneously faint. Soft, brief, broken off. The sound of a bell.
It's a bloody bell, Dandelion whispered, clambering out onto the shelf.
I was right, Geralt. It's the bell of the sunken Iss. The bell of the city of monsters, muffled by the weight of the depths. It's the damned reminding us, will you shut up?
The sound repeated, considerably closer.
Reminding us, the bard continued, squeezing out the soaking tail of his jerkin, of its dreadful fate. That bell is a warning.
The Witcher stopped paying attention to Dandelion's voice and concentrated on his other senses.
He sensed something. It's a warning, Dandelion said, sticking the tip of his tongue out, as was his custom when he was concentrating. A warning because... so we would not forget. Oh, I've got it. The heart of the bell sounds softly. It sings a song of death which can be borne more easily than oblivion.
The water right next to the Witcher exploded. Dandelion screamed. The goggle-eyed monster, emerging from the foam, aimed a broad, serrated, scythe-like blade at Geralt. Geralt's sword was already in his hand from the moment the water had begun to swell, so now he merely twisted confidently at the hips and slashed the monster across its drooping, scaly dewlap. He immediately turned the other way, where another creature was churning up the water. It was wearing a bizarre helmet and something resembling a suit of armour made of tarnished copper. The Witcher parried the blade of the short spear being thrust towards him with a broad sweep of his sword, and with the momentum the parry gave him, struck across the ichthyoid reptilian toothy muzzle. He leapt aside towards the edge of the shelf, splashing water. "Fly, Dandelion! Give me your hand! Fly, dammit!" Another creature emerged from the water, the curved sword whistling in its rough green hands. The Witcher thrust his back against the edge of the shellfish-covered rock, assumed a fighting position, but the fish-eyed creature did not approach. It was the same height as Geralt. The water also reached to its waist, but the impressively puffed-up comb on its head and its dilated gills gave the impression of greater size. The grimace distorting the broad maw, armed with teeth, was deceptively similar to a cruel smile. The creature, paying no attention to the two twitching bodies floating in the red water, raised its sword, gripping the long hilt without a crossguard in both hands. Puffing up its comb and gills even more, it deftly spun the blade in the air. Geralt heard the light blade hiss and whir. The creature took a pace forward, sending a wave towards the Witcher. Geralt took a swing and whirled his sword in response, and also took a step, taking up the challenge. The fish-eyed creature deftly twisted its long clawed fingers on the hilt and slowly lowered its arms, which were protected by tortoiseshell and copper, and plunged them up to its elbows, concealing the weapon beneath the water. The Witcher grasped his sword in both hands, his right hand just below the crossguard, his left by the pommel, and lifted the weapon up and a little to the side, above his right shoulder. He looked into the monster's eyes, but they were the iridescent eyes of a fish, eyes with spherical irises glistening coldly and metallically, eyes which neither expressed nor betrayed anything, nothing that might warn of an attack. From the depths at the bottom of the steps, disappearing into the black chasm, came the sound of a bell. Closer and closer, more and more distinct. The fish-eyed creature lunged forward, pulling its blade from under the water, attacking as swiftly as a thought with a montant thrust. Geralt was simply lucky. He had expected the blow to be dealt from the right. He parried with his blade, directed downwards, powerfully twisting his body, and rotated his sword, meeting the monster's sword flat. Now everything depended on which of them would twist their fingers more quickly on the hilt. Who would be first to move from the flat, static impasse of the blades to a blow? A blow whose force was now being generated by both of them, by shifting their body weight to the appropriate leg. Geralt already knew they were as fast as each other. But the fish-eyed creature had longer fingers. The Witcher struck it in the side above the hips, twisted into a half-turn, smote, pressing down on the blade, and easily dodged a wide, chaotic, desperate, and clumsy blow. The monster, noiselessly opening its ichthyoid mouth, disappeared beneath the water, which was pulsating with crimson clouds. "Give me your hand, quickly!" Dandelion yelled. "They're coming, a whole gang of them, I can see them!" The Witcher seized the bard's right hand, and Dandelion hauled him out of the water onto the rocky shelf. A broad wave splashed behind him. The tide had turned. They fled swiftly, pursued by the swelling wave. Geralt looked back and saw numerous other fish-like creatures bursting from the water, saw them giving chase, leaping nimbly on their muscular legs. Without a word, he speeded up. Dandelion was panting, running heavily and splashing around the now knee-high water. He suddenly stumbled and fell, sloshing among the bladder rack, supporting himself on trembling arms. Geralt caught him by the belt and hauled him out of the foam, now seething all around them. "Run!" he cried. "I'll hold them back!" "Geralt, run, Dandelion! The water's about to fill the rift, and then we won't get out of here. Run for your life!" Dandelion groaned and ran. The Witcher ran after him, hoping the monsters would become strung out in the chase. He knew he had no chance taking on the entire group. They chased him just beside the rift, because the water there was deep enough for them to swim, while he was clambering the slippery rocks with difficulty, wallowing in the foam. In the rift, however, it was too tight for them to assail him from all sides. He stopped in the basin where Dandelion had found the skull. He stopped and turned around and calmed down. He struck the first with the very tip of his sword where the temple would have been on a man. He split open the belly of the next one, which was armed with something resembling a short battle axe. A third fled. The Witcher rushed up the gorge, but at the same time a surging wave boomed, erupting in foam, seethed in an eddy in the vent, tore him off the rocks and dragged him downwards into the boiling water. He collided with a fishy creature flapping about in the eddy and thrust it away with a kick. Something caught him by his legs and pulled him down towards the seafloor. He hit the rock on his back, opened his eyes, just in time to see the dark shapes of the creatures, two swift blurs. He parried the first blur with his sword and instinctively protected himself from the second by raising his left arm. He felt a blow, pain, and immediately afterwards the sharp sting of salt. He pushed off from the bottom with his feet, splashed upwards towards the surface, formed his fingers together, and released a sign. The explosion was dull and stabbed his ears with a brief paroxysm of pain. "If I get out of this," he thought, beating the water with his arms and legs. "If I get out of this, I'll ride to Yen in Venkerberg and I'll try again. If I get out of this." He thought he could hear the booming of a trumpet or a horn. The tidal wave exploding again in the chimney lifted him up and tossed him out on his belly onto a large rock. Now he could clearly hear a booming horn and Dandelion's cries seemingly coming from all sides at once. He snorted the salt water from his nose and looked around, tossing his wet hair from his face. He was on the shore, right where they had set out from. He was lying belly down on the rocks, and a breaker was seething white foam around him. Behind him, in the gorge, now a narrow bay, a large grey dolphin danced on the waves. On its back, tossing her wet, willow-green hair, sat the mermaid. She still had beautiful breasts.
"White hair,"
she sang, waving a hand which was holding a large, conical, spirally twisting conch.
"Are you in one piece?"
"Yes," the Witcher said in amazement.
The foam around him had become pink. His left arm had stiffened and was stinging from the salt. His jacket sleeve was cut, straight and evenly, and blood was gushing from the cut.
"I got out of it," he thought. "I pulled it off again. But no, I'm not going anywhere."
He saw Dandelion, who was running towards him, stumbling over the wet pebbles.
"I've held them back," the mermaid sang, and sounded the conch again. "But not for long. Flee and return here no more, white hair. The sea is not for you."
"I know," he shouted back. "I know. Thank you, Sheenats."
Chapter 7
"Dandelion,"
Little Eye said, tearing the end of the bandage with her teeth and tying a knot on Geralt's wrist.
"Explain to me how a pile of snail shells ended up at the bottom of the stairs. Drowhard's wife is clearing them up right now and is making it clear what she thinks of you two."
"Shells?" Dandelion asked. "What shells? I have no idea. Perhaps some passing ducks dropped them."
Geralt smiled, turning his head toward the shadow. He smiled at the memory of Dandelion's curses. He had spent the entire afternoon opening shells and rummaging around in the slippery flesh, during which process he had nicked himself and soiled his shirt, but hadn't found a single pearl. And no small wonder, as they weren't pearl oysters at all, but ordinary scallops and mussels. They abandoned the idea of making soup from the shellfish when Dandelion opened the first shell. The mollusk looked unappealing and stank to high heaven. Little Eye finished bandaging him and sat down on an upturned tub. The Witcher thanked her, examining his neatly bandaged arm. The wound was deep and quite long, extending as far as the elbow, and intensely painful when he moved it. She had put on a makeshift dressing by the seashore, but before they got back, it had begun to bleed again. Just before the girl arrived, Geralt had poured a coagulating elixir onto his mutilated forearm, and boosted it with an anaesthetic elixir, and Essie had caught them just as he and Dandelion were suturing the wound using a fishing line tied to a hook. Little Eye swore at them and got down to making a dressing herself, while Dandelion regaled her with a colourful tale of the fight, several times reserving himself the exclusive right to compose a ballad about the whole incident. Essie naturally flooded Geralt with an avalanche of questions, which he was unable to answer. She took that badly and evidently had the impression he was concealing something from her. She became sullen and ceased her questioning.
"Aglaval already knows," she said. "You were seen returning, and Mrs. Drowhard ran off to spread the word when she saw the blood on the stairs. The people dashed towards the rocks, hoping the sea would toss something out. They're still hanging around there, but haven't found anything, from what I know.
Nor will they, the witcher said. I shall visit Aglovale tomorrow, but ask him, if you would, to forbid people from hanging around the dragon's fangs. Just not a word, please, about those steps or Dandelion's fantasies about the city of Ys. Treasure and sensation hunters would immediately go, and there'll be further deaths.
I'm not a gossip, Essie said sulkily, sharply tossing her lock from her forehead. If I ask you something, it isn't in order to dash off to the well at once and blab it to the washerwomen.
I'm sorry.
I must go, Dandelion suddenly said. I've got a rendezvous with Acaretta. Geralt, I'm taking your jerkin because mine is incredibly filthy and wet. Everything here is wet, Little Eye said sneeringly, nudging the articles of clothing strewn around with the tip of her shoe in disgust. How can you? They need to be hung up and properly dried. You're dreadful. It'll dry off by itself. Dandelion pulled on Geralt's damp jacket and examined the silver studs on the sleeves with delight. Don't talk rubbish. And what's this? Oh, no, that bag is still full of sludge and seaweed. And this? What's this? Yuck! Geralt and Dandelion silently observed the cobalt blue shell Essie was holding between two fingers. They had forgotten. The mollusk was slightly open and clearly reeked. It's a present, the troubadour said, moving back towards the door. It's your birthday tomorrow, isn't it, Poppet? Well, that's a present for you. This? Pretty, isn't it? Dandelion sniffed it and added quickly, It's from Geralt. He chose it for you. Oh, is that the time? Farewell. Little Eye was quiet for a moment after he had gone. The witcher looked at the stinking shellfish and felt ashamed of Dandelion and of himself. Did you remember my birthday? Essie asked slowly, holding the shell at arm's length. Really?
Give it to me, he said sharply.
He got up from the palliasse, protecting his bandaged arm.
I apologize for that, idiot.
No, she protested, removing a small knife from a sheath at her belt. It really is a pretty shell. I'll keep it as a memento. It only needs cleaning. After I've got rid of the contents, I'll throw them out of the window. The cats can eat them. Something clattered on the floor and rolled away. Geralt widened his pupils and saw what it was long before Essie. It was a pearl, an exquisitely iridescent and shimmering pearl of faintly blue colour, as big as a swollen pea. By the gods! Little Eye had also caught sight of it. Geralt! A pearl!
A pearl! He laughed. And so you did get a present, Essie. I'm glad.
Geralt, I can't accept it. That pearl is worth...
It's yours, he interrupted. Dandelion, though he plays the fool, really did remember your birthday. He really wanted to please you. He talked about it, talked aloud about it. Well, fate heard him and did what had to be done.
And you, Geralt?
Me?
Did you also want to please me? That pearl is so beautiful. It must be hugely valuable. Don't you regret it?
I'm pleased you like it. And if I regret anything, it's that there was only one and that...
Yes?
That I haven't known you as long as Dandelion. Long enough to be able to know and remember your birthday. To be able to give you presents and please you. To be able to call you Poppet.
She moved closer and suddenly threw her arms around his neck. He nimbly and swiftly anticipated her movement, dodged her lips, and kissed her coldly on the cheek, embracing her with his uninjured arm, clumsily, with reserve, gently. He felt the girl stiffen and slowly move back, but only to the length of her arms, which were still resting on his shoulders. He knew what she was waiting for, but did not do it. He did not draw her towards him. Essie let him go and turned towards the open, dirty little window. Of course, she said suddenly. You barely know me. I forgot that you barely know me.
Essie, he said after a moment's silence.
I barely know you either, she blurted, interrupting him. What of it? I love you. I can't help it. Not at all.
Essie.
Yes, I love you, Geralt. I don't care what you think. I've loved you from the moment I saw you at the engagement party.
She broke off, lowering her head. She stood before him, and Geralt regretted it was her and not the fish-eyed creature with a sword who had been hidden beneath the water. He had stood a chance against that creature, but against her he had none.
"You aren't saying anything," she said. "Nothing. Not a word."
"I'm tired," he thought. "I'm bloody weak. I need to sit down. I'm feeling dizzy. I've lost some blood and haven't eaten anything. I have to sit down. Damned little attic," he thought. "I hope it gets struck by lightning and burns down during the next storm. And there's no bloody furniture. Not even two stupid chairs and a table which divides you, across which you can so easily and safely talk. You can even hold hands. But I have to sit down on the palliasse. Have to ask her to sit down beside me. And the palliasse, stuffed with beanstalks, is dangerous. You can't escape from it. Take evasive action."
"Sit beside me, Essie."
She sat down reluctantly, tactfully, far away. Too close.
"When I found out," she whispered, interrupting the long silence. "When I heard that Dandelion had dragged you onto the beach, bleeding, I ran out of the house like a mad thing. Rushed blindly, paying no attention to anything. And then... do you know what I thought? That it was magic. That you had cast a spell on me. That you had secretly, treacherously bewitched me, spellbound me with your wolfish medallion with the evil eye. That's what I thought. But I didn't stop. Kept running. Because I understood that I desire to fall under your spell. And the reality turned out to be more awful. You didn't cast any spell on me. You didn't use any charms. Why, Geralt? Why didn't you bewitch me?"
He was silent.
"If it had been magic," she said, "it would all be so simple and easy. I would have succumbed to your power, and I'd be happy, but this... I must... I don't know what's happening to me."
"Damn it," he thought. "If Yennefer feels like I do now when she's with me, I feel sorry for her. And I shall never be astonished again. I will never hate her again. Never again. Because perhaps Yennefer feels what I'm feeling now. Feels a profound certainty that I ought to fulfill what it is impossible to fulfill. Even more impossible to fulfil than the relationship between Aglaval and Sheenatz. Certainty that a little sacrifice isn't enough here. You'd have to sacrifice everything, and there'd still be no way of knowing if that would be enough. No, I won't continue to hate Yennefer for not being able and not wanting to give me more than a little sacrifice. Now I know that a little sacrifice is a hell of a lot."
"Geralt!"
Little Eye moaned, drawing her head into her shoulders.
"I'm so ashamed. I'm ashamed of what I'm feeling. It's like an accursed infirmity, like malaria, like being unable to breathe."
He was silent.
"I always thought it was a beautiful and noble state of mind. Noble and dignified, even if it makes one unhappy. After all, I've composed so many ballads about it. And it is organic, Geralt. Meanly and heartbreakingly organic. Someone who is ill or who has drunk poison might feel like this. Because, like someone who has drunk poison, one is prepared to do anything in exchange for an antidote. Anything. Even be humiliated."
"Essie, please."
"Yes, I feel humiliated. Humiliated by having confessed everything to you. Disregarding the dignity that demands one suffers in silence. By the fact that my confession caused you embarrassment, I feel humiliated by the fact that you're embarrassed. But I couldn't have behaved any differently. I'm powerless. At your mercy, like someone who's bedridden. I've always been afraid of illness, of being weak, helpless, hopeless and alone. I've always been afraid of sickness, always believing it the worst thing that could befall me."
He was silent.
"I know," she groaned again. "I know I ought to be grateful to you for not taking advantage of the situation. But I'm not grateful to you, and I'm ashamed of it. For I hate your silence, your terrified eyes. I hate you for staying silent, for not lying, for not... And I hate her, that sorceress of yours. I'd happily stab her for... I hate her. Make me go, Geralt. Order me to leave here. For of my own free will, I cannot, but I want to get out of here. Go to the city, to a tavern. I want to have my revenge on you for my shame, for the humiliation. I'll go to the first man I find.
Damn it, he thought, hearing her voice dropping like a rag ball rolling down the stairs. She'll burst into tears, he thought. There's no doubt she'll burst into tears. What to do? What to bloody do?
Essie's hunched-up shoulders were trembling hard. The girl turned her head away and began to weep, crying softly, dreadfully calmly and unrelentingly.
I don't feel anything, he noticed with horror. Nothing. Not the smallest emotion. That fact that I will embrace her is a deliberate, measured response, not a spontaneous one. I'll hug her, for I feel as though I ought to, not because I want to. I feel nothing.
When he embraced her, she stopped crying immediately, wiped away her tears, shaking her head forcefully and turning away so that he could not see her face. And then she pressed herself to him firmly, burying her head in his chest.
A little sacrifice, he thought. Just a little sacrifice. For this will calm her. A hug, a kiss, calm caresses. She doesn't want anything more. And even if she did, what of it? For a little sacrifice, a very little sacrifice, is beautiful and worth... Were she to want more, it would calm her. A quiet, calm, gentle act of love. And I... Why, it doesn't matter. Because Essie smells of verbena, not lilac and gooseberry. Doesn't have cool, electrifying skin. Essie's hair is not a black tornado of gleaming curls. Essie's eyes are gorgeous, soft, warm, and cornflower blue. They don't blaze with a cold, unemotional, deep violet. Essie will fall asleep afterwards. Turn her head away, open her mouth slightly. Essie will not smile in triumph. For Essie. Essie is not Yennefer. And that is why I cannot. I cannot find that little sacrifice inside myself.
Please, Essie, don't cry.
I won't,
she said, moving very slowly away from him.
I won't. I understand. It cannot be any other way.
They said nothing, sitting beside each other on the palliasse, stuffed with beanstalks. Evening was approaching.
Geralt,
she suddenly said, and her voice trembled.
But perhaps it would be like it was with that shell, with that curious gift. Perhaps we could find a pearl. Later, when some time has passed.
I can see that pearl, he said with effort. Set in silver, in a little silver flower with intricate petals. I see it around your neck on a delicate silver chain, worn like I wear my medallion. That will be your talisman, Essie. A talisman which will protect you from all evil.
My talisman,
she repeated, lowering her head.
My pearl, which I shall set in silver, and from which I shall never part. My jewel, which I was given instead of... Can a talisman like that bring me luck?
Yes, Essie, be sure of it.
Can I stay here a little longer, with you?
You may.
Twilight was approaching, and dusk falling, and they were sitting on a palliasse, stuffed with beanstalks, in the garret, where there was no furniture, where there was only a wooden tub and an unlit candle on the floor, in a puddle of hardened wax. They sat in utter silence for a very long time, and then Dandelion came, They heard him approaching, strumming his lute and humming to himself. Dandelion entered, saw them, and did not say anything. Not a word. Essie also said nothing, stood up and went out without looking at them. Dandelion did not say a word, but the Witcher saw in his eyes the words that remained unsaid. Chapter 8
An intelligent race, Aglaval repeated pensively, resting an elbow on the armrest and his fist on his chin. An underwater civilization. Fish-like people living on the seabed, steps leading to the depths. Geralt, you take me for a bloody gullible duke.
Little Eye, standing beside Dandelion, snarled angrily. Dandelion shook his head in disbelief. Geralt was not in the least bothered.
It makes no difference to me, he said quietly, if you believe me or not. It is, however, my duty to warn you. Any boat that sails towards the Dragon's Fangs, or people who appear there when the tide is out, are in danger. Mortal danger. If you want to find out if it's true, if you want to risk it, that's your business. I'm simply warning you.
Ha!
The steward Zelest, who was sitting in a window seat behind Aglaval, suddenly said,
If they are monsters, the like of elves or other goblins, we don't need to worry. We feared it was something worse, or, God save us, something magical. From what the Witcher says, there are some kind of sea drowners or other sea monsters. There are ways of dealing with drowners. I heard tell that one sorcerer gave some drowners short shrift in Lake Montfort. He poured a small barrel of magical filter into the water and did for the fuckers. Didn't leave a trace.
That's true, Drowhard said, who up to then had been silent. There wasn't a trace. Nor a trace of bream, pike, crayfish or mussels. Even the waterweed on the lake floor rotted away and the alders on the bank withered.
Capital, Aglaval said derisively. Thank you for that excellent suggestion, Zelest. Do you have any more?
Aye, fair enough, the steward said, blushing. The wizard overdid it a mite with his wand, waved it about a jot too much. But we ought to manage without wizards too, your grace. The Witcher says that one can fight those monsters and also kill them. That's war, sire, like the old days. Nothing new there, eh? Werelynxes lived in the mountains, and where are they now? Wild elves and eerie wives still roam the forests, but they'll soon be an end to that. We'll secure what is ours, as our granddaddies, and only my grandchildren will see the pearls. The Duke grimaced. It is too long to wait, Zelest.
Well, it won't be that bad. Seems to me it's like this. Two boats of archers to each boat of divers. We'll soon learn those monsters some sense, learn them some fear. Am I right, Witcher, sir?
Geralt looked coldly at him, but did not respond. Aglaval turned his head away, showing his noble profile and bit his lip. Then he looked at the Witcher, narrowing his eyes and frowning.
You didn't complete your task, Geralt, he said. You fouled things up again. You had good intentions, I can't deny that. But I don't pay for good intentions, I pay for results, for the effect. And the effect, excuse the expression, is shitty, so you earn shit.
Marvellous, your grace, Dandelion jibed. Pity you weren't with us at the Dragon's Fangs. The Witcher and I might have given you the opportunity for an encounter with one of those from the sea, sword in hand. Perhaps then you would understand what this is about and stop bickering about payment.
Like a fishwife, Little Eye interjected.
I am not accustomed to bickering, bargaining, or discussing, Aglaval said calmly. I said I shall not pay you a penny, Geralt. The agreement ran, removed the danger, removed the threat, enabled the fishing of pearls without any risk to people. But you come and tell me about an intelligent race from the seabed. You advise me to stay away from the place which brings me profit. What did you do? You reputedly killed how many?
It matters not how many, Geralt said, blanching slightly. At least, not to you, Aglaval.
Precisely. Particularly since there is no proof. If you had at least brought the right hands of those fish-toads, who knows? Perhaps I would have splashed out on the normal fee my forester takes for a pair of wolf's ears.
Well, the Witcher said coldly, I'm left with no choice but to say farewell.
You are mistaken, the Duke said. Something does remain. Permanent work for quite decent coin and lodgings. The position and ticket of skipper of my armed guard, which from now on will accompany the divers. It does not have to be forever,
but only until your reputed intelligent race gains enough good sense to keep well away from my boats, to avoid them like the plague. What do you say?
No, thank you. I decline, the Witcher grimaced. A job like that doesn't suit me. I consider waging war against other races idiocy. Perhaps it's excellent sport